Chapter 12. The Death of Amaris. The days passed slowly at the farm. The second and fourth days after their coming, Jethro had paid them a short visit to say that there was no change in the situation. Amensi, he said, had left the house and taken up her abode with some relation in the city, declaring that the anxiety and disgrace were killing her. She had wished to take Mysa with her, but the girl had refused to leave her father. On the evening of the fifth day, Jethro came suddenly in at the house. The boys started to their feet as he entered, for they saw at once that something terrible had happened. His face was stained with blood. His breath came short, for he had run the 6 miles between the farm and the city at the top of his speed. "Quick, my lord, there is not a moment to lose. The whole matter's been discovered. Ere long they will be here in pursuit of you." "What of my father?" Kebron exclaimed. "I will tell you all about it afterwards. There is no time for talking now. His orders must be instantly carried out. Where are the fellows who were spying upon you?"
"One of them is probably seated outside at the entrance to the farm," Amuba replied. "You must have passed him as you entered."
"Then take up your arms and follow me," Jethro said, taking a heavy staff from the corner of the room, and followed by the two young men he went outside the gate. It was now getting dark, and as they passed out, a man standing near approached as if to see who they were. Without a word, Jethro sprang forward and brought down the staff with tremendous force upon his head, and the man fell without a cry upon the road.
"There is no fear of his giving the alarm now," Jethro said grimly, and set off in a run in the direction of the city at a pace that taxed the powers of Kebron to keep up. Presently he stopped suddenly and listened. A vague, confused sound was heard in front of them, and Jethro quickly left the road and took his course over the fields. Amuba heard the sound increase and was presently conscious that a crowd of people were passing along the road.
"It is fortunate I managed to get through," Jethro said. "They would have made short work of you both had they arrived at the farm and found you unprepared."
Jethro did not return to the road, but kept on in an oblique line towards the foot of the hills near the city.
"Where are you going, Jethro?" Amuba asked at last.
"I am going to Kigron the embalmer. Amaris has arranged with him to hide you there for the present."
When they reached the house of Kigron, Jethro went forward alone and knocked at the door. An attendant presented himself.
"Give this ring to Kigron," Jethro said, "and say that the bearer of it would speak to him here."
In 2 or 3 minutes, Kigron himself came out.
"I have brought the lads hither in obedience to the order of Amaris," Jethro said. "He told me that he had arranged the matter with you."
"And Amaris himself?"
Kigron asked.
"He is no more. The villains who sought his ruin have triumphed, and a furious mob this afternoon broke into his house and murdered him.
Kebron does not know it yet, though he cannot but suspect that something terrible has happened." The Egyptian uttered an exclamation of sorrow.
"Fools and madmen! In all the land none were more worthy of honor than Amaris. Surely the gods must be angry with Egypt when they suffer such a wonderful a victim to the passions of a mob. But where are the lads? I myself will conduct them to the place I have already prepared. The workers have all left, so there is no fear in passing through the house."
At Jethro's call, the lads came up.
"Follow me, my lord," Kigron said to Kebron. "I have had everything in readiness for your reception for some days."
Above them the hill rose in a precipitous rock. Kigron led the way along the foot of this for some little distance, and then stopped at a portal hewn into the rock itself. All this time he had carried a lighted lamp. Upon entering the portal and closing the door behind him, he produced from a niche in the wall several other lamps, lighted them, and gave one to each of his companions.
"I have, during the last 10 days, privately stored up such articles as would be necessary for you, and I trust you will not find yourselves uncomfortable."
Upon entering the apartment,
which was some 20 feet square, they found that the embalmer had not exaggerated what he had done. A table with several settles stood in the middle. Three couches piled with rushes were placed against the wall. Mats had been laid down to cover the floor, and lamps ready for burning stood upon the table. In a corner stood two jars of wine, with drinking vessels.
"All is here except food,"
Kigron said.
"That I could not prepare until I knew you were coming. Should you need anything, do not hesitate to say so. I owe my position to the patronage of my good Lord Ameris. There is nothing I would not do to ensure the safety of his son. And now, my lord, I will retire, and will presently send you food by a trusty servant."
Kebron said a few words in thanks, but he was too anxious and full of grief to say more. Directly after Kigron had left, he turned to Jethro.
"Now, Jethro, tell me all. I am prepared for the worst. My dear father is no more. Is it not so?"
"It is true, Kebron. Your noble father has been killed by a base and cowardly mob, urged on by some villains of the priesthood."
Kebron threw himself down on one of the couches and wept bitterly, while Amuba was almost as deeply affected, for Ameris had behaved to him with the kindness of a father. It was not until the following morning that Kebron was sufficiently recovered to ask Jethro to relate to him the details of his father's death.
"I was in the garden," Jethro began. "Mysa and Ruth were in a boat on the pond, and I was towing them when I heard a tumult at the gate. I pulled the boat ashore and hurried them up to the house and told Mysa to retire to her apartment, and that she was not to leave it, whatever noise she might hear, that being her father's command. Then I went out to the gate. Just as I got there, it fell in, and a crowd of people rushed through. As there were only myself and two or three of the gardeners who had run up, we could do nothing to stop them. Just as they reached the house, your father came out into the portico and said, 'Good people, what will you have?' Well, those in front of him were silent a moment, abashed by his presence and the calm manner in which he spoke. But then others behind set up a cry, 'Where is the sacred cat?' they shouted. 'We will find it,' while others again shouted, 'Down with the impious priest!' Your father replied, 'You can search the place if you will, though indeed it seems that you need not my permission, seeing that you have taken the matter into your own hands. Only I pray you, do not enter the house. There are the ladies of my family and other women there, and I swear to you that neither alive nor dead is the cat to be found there.' The cry was raised, 'Let us search the garden.' It struck me that there were two parties among the mob, one ignorant and bigoted, believing really that an offense had been committed against their gods, the other men who kept in the background but who were the moving spirits. I was not pleased when I saw the crowd so readily abandon the idea of searching the house and scatter themselves instead over the garden. I saw that several among the crowd had with them dogs trained for the chase, and this made me even more uneasy. I told one of the men to run at once and summon troops, and then I followed the crowd. Without wasting time searching elsewhere, they made straight to the enclosure where the animals were kept. No sooner did they get there than they began to search, urging on the dogs to assist them. Suddenly I started, for there was a touch upon my shoulder, and looking round I saw Ameris. And he said to me, 'Remember my instructions, Jethro. I commit Kebron to your charge.' Well, at that exact moment there was a yell of rage among the crowd, and I knew that one of the accursed hounds must have smelled the dead cat and scratched the earth from over it. Then I heard a voice cry above the rest, 'See, the sacred cat has been slain. It has been pierced by an arrow, just as I told you.' And then the crowd turned. 'Fly, Jethro,' Ameris said. 'It is my last command.' But I could not obey him this time. There was death in the eyes of those who were rushing towards him, shouting, 'Down with the despiser of the gods! Down with the slayer of the sacred cat!' And seeing that, I rushed at them. After that, everything was confusion. I had caught up a staff from the portico as I passed, and with it I struck right and left. I know many fell before they closed with me. Blows were showered upon me, and the staff fell from my hands, but I fought with my naked fists. Several times I was beaten down, but each time I rose again. And then, as if in a dream, I seemed to hear your father's voice commanding,
I commit Kebron to your care. And I burst my way through them and threw myself upon a group standing further on. But I saw as I broke through them that I could do nothing there. Your father lay on the ground, looking as calm and peaceful as when he had spoken to me 5 minutes before. But his white garments were stained with blood, and half of a dagger stood up from his body. There was no time to see more. His last command had to be obeyed, and shaking off those who tried to hold me, I fled. As I rushed out through the gate, I saw the troops I had sent for coming towards the house. But they were too late now. And so, without a pause, I took the road to the farm. I think that is all I have to tell you. Kebron was weeping bitterly, and Amuba, who was himself deeply affected, went over to his friend. Kebron, he said, I know what you are feeling now, but do not blame yourself for the calamity. You know what your father said. It was an accident, and it was doubtless the will of the great God that your arrow should fly as it did. And he himself declared he believed what followed was the result of conspiracy, and that, as we heard in the temple, there were men determined to take his life. A few minutes later, the embalmer entered, bringing them food. Amuba asked him, Have you heard what is passing in the city?
Yes, Kigron answered. Naught else is talked about. Many of those concerned in the deed escaped before the soldiers arrived there, but many were seized and are now in prison for their sacrilegious deed in raising their hand against the person of the high priest of Osiris. Those who were taken all declared they had been informed by one who said he knew it for certain that the cat was buried in the enclosure, and that it had been slain by you and my young lord here, as you had been seen going with your bows and arrows to the enclosure and were there for some time, after which the cat was never seen again. The general opinion is that though the prisoners taken will be punished, your lives are also assuredly forfeited, and that even the friendship of the king for your father would not avail to protect you.
My greatest regret now is that I did not follow my first impulse and denounce myself as the accidental killer of the cat. No blame could then have been attached to my father or to any but myself.
The disgrace still would have fallen upon your whole family, the embalmer said. Doubtless the search for you will be a hot one, but we must hope for the best.
I will go out and see what is doing, Jethro said.
In that case, the embalmer said, you will need to be disguised. Fortunately, I have the materials at hand. We use paints and stains in abundance for the clothes of the dead and the decorations of their coffins, and I can easily make you as dark as any of our people. That, with one of my wigs and some Egyptian garments, will alter you so that, so long as you do not look anyone fairly in the face, there will be no fear whatever of your discovery. But, Jethro, you must not look up. For even when I have blackened your lashes, your blue eyes would at once betray you.
In half an hour, Jethro was transformed into a middle-class citizen of Thebes, and he started on his mission of inquiry. During the day, some officials came to the establishment and made inquiries of their own after the missing lads. Not contented with denials, they went through the buildings, examining all the chambers closely. They told Kigron, it was known that Ameres was a patron of his, and that this was the very first house they had searched. Then they added that wherever the young men went, there was no chance of their escaping, for messages had been sent all over Egypt. Now Jethro had anticipated when he left that his visit to the city would be of short duration, and that he should return in an hour at the latest. But as the day passed and night fell without his return, the lads became exceedingly anxious and feared that something serious had taken place to detain him. It had been arranged indeed that they should that night have started upon their journey, and Jethro, after his return, was to have made out a list of such articles as he deemed necessary for their flight, and these Kigron had promised to purchase for him. Their plans, however, were completely upset by his non-appearance, and late in the afternoon Kigron himself went down into the city to ascertain, if he could, if Jethro had been discovered, for his name had been associated with that of the boys. Kigron returned with the news that, so far as he could learn, nothing had been heard of Jethro. The boys were full of grief and perplexity. With this was mingled an intense anxiety as to the future. Without Jethro's strong arm and good advice, how was their terrible journey to be accomplished? Kebron was in no state either to act or plan. A deep depression had seized upon him. He cared not whether he escaped or not, and would almost have welcomed detection and death. Intense, therefore, was Amuba's relief when late in the evening a footstep was heard in the outer chamber and Jethro entered. Amuba sprang to his feet with a cry of gladness. "Oh, Jethro, thank the gods you've returned! What has happened to you, and so long delayed your return here?"
"There is fresh trouble," his friend replied.
"In what way?"
"Mysa has been carried off," Jethro replied grimly.
Kebron sprang to his feet. He was devoted to his sister, and for a moment this new calamity effaced the remembrance of those which had preceded it. "Carried off? Who has done it? When was it done? How did you learn it?"
"On leaving here, I went down into the city," Jethro replied. "All business seemed suspended, and the streets were full of groups of people talking over the events of yesterday. The whole city is shaken by the fact that two such terrible acts of sacrilege, slaying the sacred cat of Bubastes and murdering a high priest of Osiris, should have taken place within so short a time of each other. All prophesy that some terrible calamity will befall the land, and that the offended gods will in some way wreak their vengeance upon Egypt. A royal order has been issued, enjoining all men to search for and arrest any person concerned in the murder of Ameres, and doubtless the severest penalties will be dealt to them. The same decree orders your arrest, wherever found, and warns all officials throughout the kingdom to keep a strict watch in the towns and villages and examine any strangers who may present themselves. Sacrifices will be offered up at all the temples throughout the land to appease the wrath of the gods. Messengers have been dispatched in all directions in the provinces, and all seem to consider it certain that in a few hours our hiding place will be discovered. Well, having heard this, I went to your father's house, not intending to go in, but simply to see if those in the neighborhood had heard any further news. The gates were open, and quite a crowd of people were passing in and out to gratify their curiosity by gazing on the scene. Relying on my disguise, I went in with the rest. No one entered the house, for a guard of soldiers had been stationed there. I passed round at the back, and presently Lyptus, the old female slave, came out to fetch water. I spoke to her in my assumed character, but she only shook her head and made no reply. Then, believing that she, like all the others in the house, was attached to the family and could be trusted, I spoke to her in my natural voice. She at once knew me. I made a sign to her to be silent, and we withdrew alone to some bushes. The tears were streaming down her face. "Oh, Jethro," she said to me, "did the gods ever before hurl such calamities upon a household? Our dear master Ameres is dead. Our lord Kebron is hunted for as men hunt for a wild beast. Our dear young mistress Mysa is missing." "Missing," I exclaimed, "what do you mean?" And she said, "Have you not heard about it? Just after the gates were beaten down and the crowd rushed along into the garden, four men burst into the house and ran from chamber to chamber until they entered that of our young mistress. We heard a scream, and a moment later they came out again bearing a figure enveloped in a wrapping. We strove to stop them, but there were naught but women in the house. They struck two of us to the ground and rushed out. Some of us ran out into the garden crying for aid, but there was a great struggle going on out there. None heeded us or our cries." Well, after Lyptus told me this, my lord, I asked her if she could describe to me the appearance of the men. She said that they were attired as respectable citizens, but that from their language and manner she believed they were ruffians of the lowest class. For a time I was so overwhelmed with his news I went out and roamed through the streets. At last I thought of Ruth. I therefore returned, but had to wait for 3 hours before old Lyptus came out again, and then I said, "I want to speak to Ruth," and she said, "Ruth has gone." "Gone," I said, "when and where?" She told me they didn't know. Well, then I asked if she was sure Ruth was not carried off as well as Mysa, and she said she was quite sure. This was a new mystery. Why Ruth should have fled, I could not guess. However, there was no more to be learned, and I again went out into the streets.